Tell you what, from the health minister yesterday, Dr. Zweli Mkhize, the second wave is officially here. The big drivers are Gauteng, the Western Cape, KZN, and the Eastern Cape. As things stand, we've already breached the 6,000 number in terms of new cases in a single day. And this, of course, is even before dates like the 16th of December, Christmas, Boxing Day, as well as New Year's. So what will all of this mean in terms of our health system's capacity to deal with the expected number of people who are going to need assistance? We're joined once again by Professor of Vaccinology at Wits University, Professor Shabir Magdi. A very good morning to you as always, Prof. You said the resurgence would be in February. It's here, isn't it?
So good morning, Bongani. So Bongani, this is really the start of the resurgence, and currently it's taking place in sort of specific districts rather than being very generalized. And I think what we're going to observe over the course of the next few weeks is a resurgence gaining momentum. And certainly come February, it's probably going to be much more widespread than just affecting a few districts, which is the current state.
Yeah. You know, earlier in the year, when we anticipated that first wave, there was a sense of dread, there was a sense of uncertainty about what it would look like. There's a phrase that's almost come to annoy me, if I may say it like that, COVID fatigue. The idea that, you know, we're simply just too tired of hearing messaging around COVID as though it's actually gone away. That's the kind of thing we need to fight against, isn't it?
Most certainly, but at the same time, I think we can be much more measured in terms of the messaging. And what we do understand about the resurgence that's taken place across many other countries, including what's happening in the United States, is that a major driver behind the resurgence in the second waves are super spread events. And in particular, people gathering in spaces indoors that have got poor ventilation. And it's not about the number of people, it's about the actual ventilation in those indoor spaces. So what we've come to understand of this virus is that most of the acquisition of the virus is because of airborne acquisition, airborne transmission, rather than touching a contaminated surface and inoculating yourself. Now, if we can try to avoid those sort of mass gatherings, and I'm talking of bars, I'm talking of shebeens, pubs, places of worship, the rage parties as an example, if we can avoid those and restrict those, in fact, we would be in a much better space in terms of the timing of the resurgence as well as the magnitude of the resurgence. So, and as you correctly point out, the key issue is to protect our healthcare services, not becoming overwhelmed.
You talk about being measured in terms of the messaging, but what we're seeing, of course, in the resurgence in Europe, in North America in particular, is just the number of cases and the number of people dying is simply staggering. I think I saw a stat that said in the US, for example, in their last 24-hour cycle, they've had over 3,000 deaths in one day. We can't underestimate the impact of a resurgence, can we?
Certainly not. I mean, we're going to be in for another real tough time. And we need to understand the amount of people that have died, the number of people that have died of COVID-19 in South Africa is not 22,000. It's close on to the 50,000 mark already. And in terms of per capita, the death rate in South Africa is close to about 80 per 100,000. And in the U.S., in fact, it's 90 per 100,000. So we're not too far off in terms of death rate per 100,000 of the population. And this is when you use the data from the Medical Research Council, excess mortality modeling.
So let's talk about how to navigate the festive season then, Prof. You're saying that the number of people obviously is a concern, but really just making sure that gatherings are in well-ventilated areas. For people who are thinking about family gatherings, for example, so they're not going to parties, they're not going to clubs, but they're thinking of the usual traditional Christmas celebrations. Are you saying that if people, for example, I don't know, let's say have a family braai at home, outside perhaps, because it is the summer, that kind of thing might be okay to do?
It is. It certainly is, provided that people that are actually symptomatic with respiratory illnesses don't actually attend that sort of gatherings. And essentially, if you're doing things outdoors, it's probably 20-30-fold much more safer than doing anything indoors. If you're going on vacation, going to the beach is not where you're going to get infected, but you're going to get infected in the evening when you go to that restaurant, especially if you're dining indoors. That's where the infections are going to take place. So have a party, but have those parties outdoors. But even when having those parties outdoors, what we know is that if you're in direct contact with an infected person for more than 10 to 15 minutes and you're not wearing a mask and you're within a 2-meter distance, there is a risk of being infected. So even with those outdoor gatherings, there needs to be some measured approach in terms of how you engage and interact with people.
So obviously all the usual things you've been telling us about, the non-pharmaceutical interventions, the wearing of masks, sanitizing, keeping a reasonable distance from the people you are with, that kind of thing still needs to be in place.
Oh, very much so, unless we want to get rid of the resurgence.
From a government point of view, though, not many of us have complied with these regulations. There are many areas around the country where people have refused to wear masks in public, where people have gathered in mass groups. From a government point of view, I mean, what kind of advice will you be offering government in terms of what now needs to be done around how to restrict the spread of this thing?
Like I said, the only thing that we have got within our toolbox at this point in time is to restrict mass gatherings in poorly ventilated indoor areas, and in fact, in any indoor area. Beyond that, there's very little government can do right now. There's no way that we can go into a lockdown, and going into higher levels of lockdown is not going to get rid of the virus. All that it's going to do is delay the resurgence. And I think South Africa is a classical example, which shows that, in fact, the number of people that were infected were the first wave. Despite us going into a highly restrictive lockdowns, what it really achieved was delaying the outbreak by about 4 to 5 weeks. But the absolute number of people that were infected probably wouldn't have been much different than in the absence of the lockdown. But the lockdown did provide some time for healthcare facilities to better prepare themselves.
And yet we are seeing hospitals, for example, in the Eastern Cape, once more overwhelmed in terms of the number of people who are needing hospitalization and that system's capacity and readiness to deal with them.
So under very specific conditions, you might actually need to go to a lockdown if your healthcare facility has been completely overwhelmed. It's not going to eventually change the number of people that get infected, but what it would do is that it would spread out the hospitalization, when the hospitalizations take place. Fortunately, in Nelson Mandela Bay, the indications now is that they've already peaked and they're on the downward trajectory.
So you talk about this then being the start of the resurgence. You're saying that it'll reach its height in February. Just maybe take us through the lay of the land, what we can expect to unfold in the next month and a half.
So, again, it all comes down to the behavior of South Africans, and in particular, how much we contribute to this sort of super spreader events. People are going to be going to the coast, coming back to Gauteng. But even if you're staying in Gauteng and you're engaging in parties and everything else, that's when the virus is going to start transmitting much more across the community. Right now, probably 3/4 of South Africans, or at least 2/3 of South Africans, still remain susceptible being infected with virus, especially in the urban areas, and perhaps even a higher percentage in more affluent areas. So as the virus continues transmitting, it never went away. Even when we sort of came plateaued after the first wave, the number of daily infections was still in the region of about 1,800. So all that takes is for the super spreader event for there to be a rapid escalation in terms of the number of new infections.
You're obviously part of the efforts around the vaccines that are being developed. There is, of course, a trial even in South Africa at this stage. I mean, any good news on the horizon as far as that aspect of things is concerned?
Well, there's good news globally, but not good news in South Africa, in that we've been very much delayed in terms of putting into place systems to ensure that we get early access to vaccine. And it's not going to be particularly helpful if we only get vaccine come June, July, when we would have already gone to a second peak. So the delay in terms of securing access to the vaccine and reasonable quantities of the vaccine is something which is really unfortunate in South Africa, particularly since we're actually involved in 3 different vaccine trials, and we're in a very, very favorable position to have negotiated with those companies to gain early access at an affordable price with large enough quantities.
Wasn't there risk in terms of, what we can afford to pay and what this thing might actually cost in the long run? Wasn't that a well-calculated risk?
Unfortunately not. The problem is that the impact on the economy, without not spending whatever money is required now, is going to far exceed than what the cost of the actual vaccine. As you know, there's already going to be a 300 billion rand shortfall would receive our revenue this year alone because of our response to COVID-19. And that is not going to get any better next year if we go to another major wave and if we have to go into higher levels of restriction. So it's really a balance in terms of what you actually wanting to do and what you pay weighing off against. The economy is in dire straits and it's not going to assist not spending the money on vaccines, but then taking a further knock in terms of the economy.
But as far as you can tell, we're looking at what, towards the end or the later part of next year, insofar as a rollout in this country is concerned?
Well, I think we possibly will get some vaccine sometime in the second quarter of next year. The government has indicated they would get adequate amount of vaccine for at least 10% of the population from the COVID facility, and that would probably become available around about April, May next year. But there still is opportunity of engaging with the companies to try to get vaccine at an earlier stage in South Africa.
Professor Shabir Makhti, always a pleasure to chat to you, Professor of Vaccinology at Wits University. So I think my take out from all of that is that this is a time for calm heads, right? This is a time for calm heads and good old-fashioned common sense. Make sure that ventilation is something you think about if you are going to be having family gatherings. Make sure, obviously, that there are masks available. People are wearing them. There's sanitation and clean hands, washing of hands. But really, we've all got to be responsible.